Thank you for joining this, the final in a series of five programs exploring Australia's space policies. Whether or not Australia should have a space agency has loomed large in this series. But it is not the only issue facing Australia as we head towards the end of the second decade of the 21st century. Young people are generally supportive of Australian involvement in space activities. Few, however, are as gung-ho in favour as Troy McCann. During 2016, he was a driving force in the group centred around Melbourne University that calls itself Melbourne Space Programme. Speaking at the Australian Space Research Conference at RMIT University, he laid out some proposals for new space activities in Australia. His paper was titled Growing Australia's Space Sector.
I'd like to start off with some of my hypotheses for new space in Australia. The first is that Australia needs a productive space industry to sustain a competitive economy and society. Two is the government should enable innovation through private space activity first, where possible, before tackling larger problems through a publicly funded agency. Thirdly, Australia should not model the local space industry in the image of any existing foreign industries due to the rapid shift of activity from public to private enterprise globally. So to give you a quick outline of the sections I want to discuss with you, we're going to start on the macro level, the state of the global space industry, before taking a look at things at home. Then I want to drill down into the role that I think the innovation agenda needs to play when we're talking about building a local space industry for the 21st century. And then I'll conclude with a proposal on methods by which I think we can accelerate our impact on the global space industry. So with ever-increasing activity of space, of private companies in space over the past decade, or more, public space agencies around the globe have been decreasing their activities year on year. NASA is at least one agency who have explicitly stated that they see the near future of low Earth orbit dominated by commercial enterprise rather than a consortium of nations, and they're moving at the moment to make this happen. For example, there are already discussions about privatisation of the International Space Station within the next decade even. So this allows traditional space agencies to focus their efforts deeper in space, yet even the mission to Mars is likely to involve the assistance of new space companies such as SpaceX, as I'm sure we've all heard recently. So furthermore, in the global investment in commercial space over the past 12 months has been more than the past decade combined. So that we're at the dawn of a new era in space, as I'm sure we all know, but no one knows what it's going to look like, which is a particularly important consideration to make while we're gathering to push for an Australian space industry. It's a safe bet to say that the new global space industry is not going to look like it did in the past century. And I think this is really important to have in our conversations regarding an Australian space industry. So I'm going to trip over this. So we're still at the stage of asking questions here, I think, in Australia. And it's really important to make sure that we're asking ourselves the right questions. So I think the question shouldn't be, do we need an Australian space agency? Because the question is really one in search of a problem. But instead, what problems do we face that could be solved by space activity from Australia? By the way, just to put it out there, my gut feeling is we obviously do need a government agency that would be vastly different to NASA, the European Space Agency, etc. But we need to validate the questions objectively. So in terms of Australia, we can see that the Australian space industry is brewing, and particularly with the Turnbull government's Federal Review of the Space Activities Act, we are all in hope there will be a lot of the legislative impediments can be reduced to allow our innovative entrepreneurs to tackle the real problems of both Australians and around the globe. But the Space Activities Act is just one of three federal acts that we do need to discuss as well, because the Defence Trade Controls Act and the Ready Communications Act are also considerations we really need to look at. There's some good work going into discussing these issues with our politicians as well. Just last week, Andrea Boyd spoke to Parliament about innovation in space in Australia and the need for the government support. And I know from my time as Managing Director of the Melbourne Space Program, where we built a team of law students explicitly exploring space law and policy, that parties all along the political spectrum are actually very interested in developing space policy. So it's not just the Liberals as well. And something I don't really hear too much about at conferences like this is the role of the National Innovation Science Agenda. The National Innovation Science Agenda is a perfect pairing to launch a 21st century commercial space industry in Australia. Let's not forget that even with all of these hurdles in the way, we have over a dozen space-related startup companies. I actually really struggled to fit them all onto a single slide. And this is absolutely fantastic. So, you know, give, you know, if you're on here, give yourself a pat on the back. Commercial space in Australia is already proving innovative enough to do really well despite the regulatory hurdles. And we've got some really good momentum, so let's keep it up. So let's get back to the question of why we actually need space or space activity. We in this room are really, we're the early adopters of space in Australia. We're the geeks that get really excited about technology and the science fiction, but we're not necessarily very good at convincing anyone else that we should be putting a lot of effort into this. And that's because there's a lot of questions, a lot of opinions and conjecture around. The problem that we need to start asking is we need to start asking the right questions and objectively validating those. Space 2.0, or new space, is an uncharted sector. And in face of uncertainty on what it will look like in even 5 to 10 years from now, we need to apply startup science methodologies to best position ourselves if we want a successful Australian space sector, and particularly one that might also have an export market rather than just import. So for those in this room who know space is critical to many other industries of our economy, primarily through the use of satellite technology. But for example, if you're looking at developing satellite technology, you still need to objectively establish what your potential customer problems are. Because at the moment, globally speaking, I don't think we really understand these quite well enough yet. And this presents us in Australia with a really great opportunity to innovate. So that brings me to this. So first, let me try to clear up what innovation is, because these days I think it's got a lost meaning due to it being turned into a massive buzzword. Innovation is the commercialization of invention, understanding and solving real problems through the creation of new ideas and putting them together to create a new service, a product, or even, like we're talking about at the moment, an entire industry. It's usually achieved through lots of collaboration, mixed skill sets. Now, the Australian Council of Learned Academies recently published a report on innovation in Australia, part of which suggested a key to that innovation is the sharing of ideas and working together across organisational boundaries. And one of the things I think you'll pick up on, in my view, is that we, as the Australians of the space community, focus far too much on the technology. It's almost inherent in our community because we're so interested in being a part of it. That's why we're so interested in being a part of it. But it's something we need to fight, and we need to work out where the real problems lie for most people and how they can best be solved using technology, not the other way around. We also need to make sure that we educate the next generation to think in this way. So it's important that in making this community more accessible to others, that we innovate in areas such as STEAM education, so science, technology, the arts, maths. Making sure lots of kids are engaged so that they'll one day be motivated to solve real problems in the future. And of course, public policy and law, as boring as it sort of is. We tested some of this with the Melbourne Space Program, where we built that team of law students, and they're developing some fantastic experience merging STEM and policy together in their extracurricular activity. It's also important for space policy-related startups, one of them such as Space Freak, who came out of the Melbourne Space Hackathon that the Melbourne Space Program ran earlier this year. And they're attempting to reduce the barriers for Australian startups facing huge RF licensing costs just to operate nano satellites in space. So recently I was discussing this with Tim Parsons of the Delta V Space Accelerator, who I'm sure most of you know, and he brought up some very good points that I thought are worth mentioning. There's a pattern in space startups to attempt to tackle problems in the same way that traditional aerospace have done so. For example, build a satellite from scratch, code the software, process the data, and then sell all of that to the end customer. The first mistake that I think with this approach is that it's accumulating a lot of work to tackle at once. What in most cases is an assumed end customer problem as well. But this value chain could be tackled by a whole string of different companies or startups, each involving specific problems that they can hand over to the next. So unlike big aerospace, new space companies aren't being supplied with big multi-billion dollar contracts to tackle entire value chains in one hit. We need to look at what every other industry does to create a thriving economy. So for example, to use something very, very different, your apples at Coles aren't grown by Coles at Coles-branded farms around the country. A farmer purchases seeds and to plant them, and once they've grown, they pick them, and they sell them to make a profit to a distributor. The distributor is happy to pay the higher price than the seeds because the farmer added value to the product. The distributor, having sourced the apples from many different farmers, transports them to the Coles supermarkets throughout the area, where they then make a profit. Coles are then happy to pay the higher price again because they haven't had to approach multiple sources and organise the logistics behind it. Then you, the end customer, purchases the right kind of apples that you would like to eat. So if we want to kickstart a competitive space industry in this country, I think we need to look at the potential areas of added value along the value chain and have startups tackle those problems individually. Otherwise, the problems are just too nebulous to develop really good solutions for. What's great with the development of CubeSats is that in this day and age, you can literally purchase a satellite off the shelf. You can use that as a platform to rapidly build a fleet of satellites while only having to focus on the software, for example. But what if we added more layers of abstraction into this, you could call it a space stack, where the end customer only needs to interface with the final like application layer type solution? The critical aspect of this sort of industry is it inherently invites collaboration, which promotes innovation, as we established before. It also helps ensure that the real customer problems are being solved through an agile industry. So I want to put the question to you now, what does the ideal Australian space industry look like? And if the first thought that popped into your mind was NASA or the European Space Agency, I personally think you've got the wrong idea. We can't strive for a space industry that resembles the space industries of the 20th century because they're all changing greatly at the moment due to commercial players entering the ring. We're starting with a really clean slate, and this gives us a great opportunity to disrupt the global shift towards having more commercial space ventures. We shouldn't simply be saying we need a space agency, but we should be asking what the role of government should be in a space industry of the 21st century. What are our assumptions in answering this question, and can we test and validate those? So returning back to my earlier hypothesis from the start, I think the best solution will fall somewhere around a commercial space industry enabled through regulatory support from the government, with the government collaborating with other nations to undertake space-based ventures where private players cannot yet access. I think it would be fantastic to move away from an import-only industry to one that exports. Space contributes around $4 billion of annual GDP growth now, so I can only imagine what it would look like afterwards. We also have some indications on how a membership to the European Space Agency might benefit us based on similar nations like Canada. But it's not enough to use analogies and compare a potential Australian space industry to global industries which are undergoing major overhauls. We need to make sure we're talking about promoting commercial space as well. So how can we promote a thriving new space industry, as we'll call it, in Australia? We need to bring existing new space companies and their supporters together. We need to spread innovation and entrepreneurship skills development to incubate space startup companies looking to tackle real market problems. And this was a large part of my vision in founding the Melbourne Space Program, and in particular running the Melbourne Space Hack, which was a part of our Final Frontier Festival a few months ago. We have Delta V, which exists to help space companies accelerate, but we also need to help incubate great ideas as well. And this is something I think we can all work towards now, even without a government space agency. And we should focus our efforts on achieving both of those things. So here's my proposal. I think we need to start raising funding to run space incubation programs around the nation. We can run strategic hackathons to identify groups who are able to tackle full stacks of problems and collaborate with each other. For example, the teams might be individually related to satellite hardware, drones, telecommunications, data processing, legal support, etc. The teams tackling problems within each value chain should each extend all the way down to specific verticals. This might be providing Internet of Things or machine-to-machine access to rural machinery or remote sensing and bushfires, that sort of thing. We need to teach startup science, and again, it's another buzzword, but the science and tried-and-true methods, the science and tried-and-true methods by which you can discover and solve real-world problems. Finally, we need to continue to build public dialogue and engage with politicians to correct the regulatory issues which we face and to receive their support. So, just in closing, I think the future of space in Australia is dependent on asking questions and objectively validating all of our assumptions. That's really the crux of what I want to get across. So, just
speaking at RMIT University, that was Troy McCann, at the time a member of the Melbourne Space Program Group. Further north along Swanston Street, Troy was a driving force behind the Final Frontier Festival at Melbourne University. Part of that festival was a panel discussion on the politics behind space in Australia. Participants included Jason Held, the founder of Sabre Astronautics in Sydney, Owen Mace, who, as a student in the 1960s, helped build the Australis Oscar V amateur radio satellite at Melbourne University, and Brett Biddington, the owner of the Melbourne company Beddington Research Proprietary Limited. Let's take a listen in as they discuss the role of venture capital in space activities.
Hi, thanks. My name is Sebastian, and I'm one of the only companies to have actually gotten approved to fly an Australian-made object into space, the other being Optus, and I'm from CubeRider. And I think this whole ESA conversation is a bit of a pipe dream personally. What I think I would really like to ask you guys is, what's the role of venture capital and private investment in the space industry? I mean, you see it in Silicon Valley, you see it in the US now, and you see it in Europe as well, where there's hundreds of, literally billions of dollars being invested in small space startup companies, and then they're going off and doing massive big things and disrupting traditional players like Global Star satellite imaging and stuff like that. And yeah, I'd just like to hear your opinions.
Yeah, okay. I think you've hit the nail on the head. We're talking apples and oranges. Okay, so on one hand, having a space agency, ESA, all that has certain benefits that's already been discussed. Whether it happens or not is immaterial because the disruption's happening today. Right, so you got a flight to the ISS. You know, Obelisk Systems. You got hardware going up with you guys up there. I think that's awesome. That's exactly the type of stuff that is happening completely independently of any political party. So the role of venture capital, it's a huge question. I'm not going to dig too deeply into it, but venture capital is already being spent on space. Their investors in Australia are looking at it as well. They've taken some time to get on board. I think culturally in Australia, we have this thing where I like to say, comparing Australians and Americans, Australians are pioneers, not explorers. Americans are explorers a little bit more so than pioneers. And what I mean by that is Americans will look for something brand new nobody else has done before and be like, wow, let's try something brand new and take that risk. Australians are more cautious. Okay, it's like, all right, you've done that before, but oh, you look kind of like a wedge. You see something that's successful even a little bit and you build something brand new. Rocket Labs, great example, New Zealand company built by Australians, primarily. I've had a lot of students that go there. Planet Labs, who's got some competitors in this room, they opened a door proving that you could sell using imagery, mass market. They raised $200 million. Their CTO is Australian. The whole point is they moved overseas and did it. They could have done it here. I'm not going to argue about the rocket, but certainly they could have done it here. Okay, any satellite manufacturing can be done here and attempted. That is what we're seeing. A disruption means that it's not, we don't have a choice. The government is actually, and this is back to that question before, the government is now scrambling to respond to the market condition. All right, so it's up to us to show the government the way. And they're coming to us. They say, I don't know what to do with these CubeSats. Are they useful? Are they, well, yeah, they're useful. You know, I mean, 3 to 5 meters per pixel. You could do naval warfare with that. You could do anti-piracy. You could do agriculture, mining, all these things you care about. Great. Okay, is there still a role for big space? Sure, 1 meter per pixel, sub-millimeter. Yeah, there's a whole lot more you're going to do with that. But the technology is changing so rapidly with the CubeSats that everyone's a scramble. Okay, so the role with government should be to produce regulation that makes it easier to be a part of that story, okay? It should be, and I think there's a lot of mechanisms talking about innovation and the story on innovation that's actually happening that they are listening to on both sides of the political aisle that I think is very much in your favor, in your favor. You're all going to win, okay? The point is you have to start now. That's the point.
I think there is another role for government, and that is to be the customer. That was my point I was trying to make before. And yes, it's going to have to take a risk. And yes, sorry, Mr. Government Project Manager, you're going to end up with a project that fails everyone. So sorry about that. But it's going to happen. But then there are going to be the wild-ass success stories that you know, just make it all worthwhile. And I think that's the point I was trying to make, that we're too scared to take. And this is a cultural thing. It's a cultural thing that comes from way back when, even before I was born, if you can believe that. It's a cultural thing that we don't sort of believe we can do it. We don't trust that we can do it. And I've just seen that so many times in my career. And, you know, the biggest buyer in Australia is government.
And ladies and gents, just yesterday in the morning, Deloitte has been taken on board by the industry department to try to understand what the cyber security growth centre is going to look like in Australia. Now, the problem is growth centres are meant to be industry-led. So how can you have a cyber security industry-led growth centre if you don't have any cyber security industry? Do you see the parallel with what we've been talking about today? And exactly the same point was made by a very successful startup. It was M5 Networks, bought by Northrop Grumman, and now the guys, having sold that, have gone back to the start and they're starting another startup. And they said, we don't care about the government grants, just give us a purchase order.
Yes.
Because with the purchase order, I can then go overseas and sell and say to answer that very first question, but who in your country has bought your product?
Absolutely.
So that point, you could see Doug Elix and Adrian Turner, the two guys who are running this cyber growth centre, writing furiously, let alone the bureaucrats in the back from the Department of Industry. Now, whether we can crack something that we haven't cracked for 250 years, jury's out, but we've got to keep hammering at this. Just ask, don't ask for grants, ask for purchase orders, all you entrepreneurs, and see how we go. All right?
Yeah.
A discussion held at the Final Frontier Festival at Melbourne University. And I note that there was a mention of cybersecurity in the federal budget this year. A few months ago, the Space Industry Association of Australia reopened the debate on whether Australia should have its own space agency. In launching a white discussion paper on the topic, they invited questions. The Space Show's Peter Owood took up the invitation and asked about the costs of forming and running such an agency. Responding were Michael Davis, the chair of the Space Industry Association of Australia in Adelaide, Gordon Pike, who's a member of that association, lives in Sydney, and Bruce Middleton, also a member, who lives in Canberra.
Peter Aylward from the Space Association, Southern FM. My question is...
In Melbourne.
That's correct. Do you have an estimate or recommendation on the budgetary outlay that the government would need to make on a annual and across, say, a five-year period to establish and operate the proposed space agency? And would that be within the department or would it be an extra additional expenditure?
Well, the short answer to the first part of your question is no. We, at this stage of our policy formation, are simply advocating the in-principle decision to establish the agency. We think that one of the first tasks of the board will be to formulate the strategic plan for the National Space Program, which will include, of course, budgetary consideration. And we have to be realistic, or they have to be realistic, about what would be politically acceptable. We envisage a growth in that national budget, of course, over time as milestones are achieved. But the second important point you raise, which is in our white paper, is that we strongly believe that the new agency must report direct to the minister. And this is recommended on advice of those who've been through previous iterations. And there is no question that successful space agencies around the world are given that degree of independence. In other words, they're not treated as simply parts of other government agencies or departments. They are given a status which befits the importance of their work and which requires, in the case of Australia, a reporting relationship direct to the relevant minister. And so this is an important part of what we've said in the white paper.
Would that be similar to like the CSIRO or something along those lines?
The CSIRO is an independent agency reporting direct to the Minister, and there are smaller agencies like the ANSTO, the Nuclear and Science and Technology Organisation, and many of them. I think the Marine Study Organisation is another such example. And so if you look through the, you know, the Commonwealth budget, you can see how money is allocated direct to independent statutory agencies.
Michael, it's Gordon here again. I could not agree more, because there have been something like three other papers on these lines over the last 30-odd years, and they all say that.
Yep.
And this comes back to a point which I really appreciated that you made in your introductory comments to this whole phone call, that you have actually engaged government people already, because one of my concerns has been with these three and now four other papers along the same lines, they go to government and they get completely ignored.
Michael, Bruce Middleton, may I offer a comment?
Please, oh, Bruce.
Hi, Bruce.
Could I just, perhaps, Bruce, would you just give us a very quick description of your background in the Australian space sector?
Yeah, I feel a strong sense of deja vu, but yes, I was charged with establishing the Australian Space Office in 1987. And I ran it until 1993. That was the last time we had something called a national space program of all of $6 million a year. And I fought the battle that that you are fighting now. And I got a deep understanding of why we were where we were, and I think an understanding of why we didn't progress from there. So I thought it might be helpful if I just offered a few comments. May I go ahead?
Please.
First of all, I would caution not to make too much of the early history. The reality is that the things that were achieved because we could piggyback on the expenditures and efforts of others who were much more committed and were prepared to put more resources in, particularly the British. Australia's involvement in Woomera was never a space commitment, it was a defence commitment. And underlying all of that, as I discovered, and it was until I think very recently still the case, no senior government minister of either persuasion has ever taken the trouble to understand this industry, and that has always been the barrier. You know, I congratulate you on the paper. I think in recent years big steps have been made to correcting that, but I caution that the economists are the enemy. It would seem to me that at the present moment, economics as the policy advising profession is on the back foot, and that's probably a good thing, but be aware that that's where the opposition comes from primarily. And finally, I would just underline what Gordon just said, which is to succeed, you are engaged in the political process. If you don't engage senior ministers and convince them, we won't win. And so that is something that requires quite a lot of effort. I would also add that it's important that the agency report to a senior minister. Most portfolios have more than one minister, but as we found in our time, if you report to the junior one, you don't get very far. I hope that's helpful.
Yes, extremely helpful. Thank you, Bruce. Any other questions?
It's Peter Aylward again. Just as a follow-up, I guess, to that last point, what level of bipartisan support do you envisage? Have you engaged with the opposition and other parties, and I guess the other parties within the governing party at the moment, given Malcolm Turnbull's situation?
Yes, we are talking to the Shadow Minister for Industry and Science, Senator Carr, and he, as a minister, was very strongly supportive of a national space effort, and it was under his ministership that the Australian Space Research Program was established and funded, and so we're fortunate that he is still the shadow minister, And yes, we are actively engaged with him as well, as of course the minister himself, Senator Sinodinos, and his assistant minister, Mr. Laundy.
Michael Davis, Gordon Pike and Bruce Middleton responding to our space show question about the proposed costs of an Australian space agency. And as you heard, no one knows. In a previous episode of this five-part policy series, we pointed out that government responsibility for space activities lies across many departments. One of those is the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation. Phil Crosby is chair of the Space Industry Association's Advisory Council. He works in CSIRO, and he pointed out to the Space Industry Association the links in space activity between CSIRO and industry.
Phil Crosby from CSIRO. We operate the NASA JPL Deep Space Network tracking station at Tibbin Billa, just outside Canberra. That's already been spoken about. That capability is vital to us and our relationship with America. Australia is also largely CSIRO is building and hosting the largest scientific instrument on the planet, which is the Square Kilometre Array Telescope in Western Australia, which media would be aware of. That's likely to be a project $2 billion plus ultimately. These mega projects have got a great track record for technology spin-offs, and Wi-Fi is the poster boy of that, of course. But CSIRO and these mega projects do draw on industry for not just R&D, but also construction and operations. So there's real money here. So, you know, whether we're looking down from space from orbit, or whether we're looking up out into the universe, there are synergies in the technology. So, you know, we see that there's a distinct advantage in closer links with the space sector, which would be realised under a central space agency. And I suppose in closing, I'll just say that this initiative really could be seen as a business stimulation exercise as much as anything else.
With that comment by Phil Crosby of the Space Industry Association, we conclude our five-part series exploring the politics and other factors determining Australia's space policy. This series used recordings made by myself, Andrew Rennie, and Peter Arwood. They were edited by myself. The script was researched, written, narrated, and produced by Andrew Rennie. The Space Show is presented for Southern FM by members of the Space Association of Australia, Incorporated, as a community service.